prison for 10 years and sentenced to 1,000 lashes for a blog that he ran called Saudi Arabian Liberals. On this blog, he discussed issues of liberalism, of religion, of the relationship between the two. And because of that, he has been charged with violating really draconian information technology laws in Saudi Arabia. And his family is living in exile in Canada.
How do you survive 1,000 lashes? I mean, I'm amazed he's alive.
I think that there's a double question there. How does one survive 10 years in a Saudi Arabian prison?
Oh, God. I was going to go to that next.
Certainly. Well, he's been given the lashing sentence meted out at 10 lashes at a time. He has been flogged publicly once. The case captured a lot of global attention at that moment, and there really was an immediate global outcry in response, in part because there was a video leaked, despite the fact that it's illegal to film public floggings in Saudi Arabia. There was a video leaked, and so the world really saw the brutality that Raif Badawi has been subject to in Saudi Arabia. We believe that that immediate response, the grassroots activism and the outcry of several governments across the world has helped postpone, if not stop, subsequent lashings. But we continue to call for his release. It's imperative that now that this global outcry has subsided without additional floggings, that he not just be allowed to languish in the shadows of the Saudi prison.
You know, I've written an almost daily blog for a dozen years. And the notion, you know, you write them, you put them up, they get posted, and away you go. These are not things that you think about for days and years before you write them. The notion that you could go to prison for a blog period, or if you go to prison for 10 years, or to go to prison and get 1,000, I mean, this is just like, wow. I mean, now is he in solitary, or do people get to visit him? I mean, do people know his condition?
It's very difficult for us to know his condition, in part because Amnesty is not allowed into the country. We are in close touch with his wife and Seth Khadar, who will be coming to Washington, D.C. next week to meet with high-level members of the State Department, of Congress, and others to speak about his case. But it's very difficult to know exactly what's happening to him. Again, just as we talk about Albert Woodfox's case being part of this larger landscape around race and criminalization in the U.S. justice system, Raif Badawi's case can only really be understood within the context of a much larger crackdown on human rights and on freedom of expression in Saudi Arabia. His conviction stems from articles that he wrote, which in many ways are very innocuous discussions of things like religion and freedom of expression. But the Saudi Arabian authorities really have a widespread campaign to persecute civil society activists and human rights defenders, and they're doing it with almost complete impunity. The United States and Saudi Arabia, as you know, have an important strategic relationship, or so-called strategic relationship, that involves really billions of dollars in arms and in oil money. And the United States so far has failed to really put human rights at the center of their relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and to press for the release of prisoners of conscience, like Raif Badawi. In fact, Raif's brother-in-law, who's also his lawyer, Walid Abu Al-Khair, is one of the most well-known human rights defenders in the country, and he's also in prison. He was one of the first people to be imprisoned in a special terrorism court that Saudi Arabia has set up, and the United States has not spoken out widely about that case, which is really, I think, a shame and a stain on our country's reputation.
How does he act as his brother's lawyer when he's also in prison? And now I've got to also ask, if he's one of the best well-known human rights lawyers in Saudi Arabia, how is this not all combined in what's happening to both the lawyer and the blogger?
Well, for us, it absolutely is combined. We'll be elevating Walid's case in our upcoming Right for Rights campaign, which looks at emblematic cases of human rights defenders, prisoners of conscience, torture survivors, and others around the world. We are in touch with the families, and we really seek to uplift both of those cases. I would say, you know, it's impossible for him to represent Raif while they're both in prison, and that really speaks to the just sort of fractured nature of rule of law in Saudi Arabia. when someone can be tried in a terrorism court for their work as a human rights defender, for their work as a lawyer, when someone can be put in prison for writing very simply about the relationship between a faith-based society and freedom of expression and liberalism. And so I think that when you look at that, when you look at those lack of basic checks on rule of law, it becomes imperative that the global community step up, speak out, and hold these authorities to account and call for the release of people like Reyes, like Waleed, and here in the United States, like Albert, because without the voices of an engaged grassroots human rights community, then there are no political costs and there are no reasons for these powerful people to secure the release of prisoners across the world.
We're talking to Jasmine Heiss, who's a senior campaigner for Amnesty International in the U.S. Obviously, if Amnesty is barred from Saudi Arabia, you haven't been there, so your work as an organizer in this campaign is challenged as well. So what can people do to help?
Well, there's many things that people can do to help. Right now, to see the full breadth of Amnesty's work, you can go to amnestyusa.org to take immediate action on the cases that I've mentioned, to immediately send an appeal to the Louisiana authorities on Albert Woodfox's behalf. Folks can go to amnestyusa.org/angola3. And then to take action on behalf of Reyes Badawi, the Saudi Arabian blogger, again, folks can go to amnestyusa.org/freereis. That's FREERAIS. And I would just, you know, in many ways we think of the world, we look out at all of the horrible things happening every day, global atrocities, injustices, and it really confounds the moral imagination. It can become overwhelming. But we know that when people speak out together, when our billion-person-wide global community, our millions of Amnesty supporters, speak with one voice on behalf of prisoners of conscience and human rights defenders, we can have an impact. We can quite literally change people's lives. So I would encourage people to go to take action and to become engaged, because you can be the voice that helps change the world.
I'm going to have you repeat those websites again before we end the show, but how long have you been doing this? Because this must be a frustrating job in some ways.
I have been with Amnesty for about 3.5 years. There are many days, you are right, that I wake up and I think we are working against forces that are too big to possibly be overcome. But in many ways, as with everyone in this movement and in this work, I am standing on the shoulders of giants, of people like Robert King and Malik Rahim in Louisiana, who were some of the earliest advocates for Albert Woodfox. Robert King was one of the Angola Three, the first freed member, and today is their most tireless advocate. We're working side by side with people like Ensaf Haidar, the wife of Raif Badawi, who has traveled the world to shine a light on her husband's case. And so even in those moments of despair or frustration, you just look around the world. I look around the world and see people who are getting up and who are committed to fighting for human rights every day. And it is really an honor. It's humbling to be part of that community.
I have no doubt. But you also must have your antenna up for where we may see problems like this starting to emerge elsewhere. Are there areas that you were worried about that the sort of oppressive criminal injustice systems may be coming to the same kinds of problems we're talking about in the Woodfox case or the Saudi Arabia incident?
I think that one of the things that I have colleagues working on that I find perhaps the most compelling and the most troubling, very closely connected to Albert Woodfox's case, is the surveillance of communities here in the United States, both activists, Muslim communities, and the way in which that is really proceeding unchecked in many ways, both by police departments and others. I think beyond that, you know, we really are confronting a crisis of mass incarceration in this country. And so we're looking at Amnesty as some of those drivers of mass incarceration and trying to understand what are the things that need to be put in place to address those, looking at things like immigration detention and excessively high bail being imposed, debtors' prisons, all of those issues. I would say that my sort of laundry list of problems that we see across the country and around the world could be endless, but those are some of the things that I really see coming to a head. And also, I think now is the moment for those issues. We really feel the fierce urgency of now. Now is the time to step up and do what we can to change some of those oppressive systems.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, when you read that even Ferguson, Missouri, obviated more than 1,000 cases that were pending on, you know, these crazy charges. Debtor's prison is really the most accurate word when you start essentially holding low-income people. And I guess there was this recent cell phone footage that came out of a Georgia judge trying to shake down poor people to get, you know, $500 here, $300 here, go to jail if they didn't come up with some noxious amount of money to deal with some ridiculous kind of traffic violation, regardless of the United States Supreme Court saying, hey, you can't do that. If somebody doesn't have the money to pay, you can't hold them in jail. But that's, it may not be mass incarceration, as you're saying, Jasmine, but it's incarceration, and it's happening in enough places and enough particularly urban areas in the country. It almost is mass incarceration now, isn't it?
Certainly, I think when we look at it, again, it contributes to the sheer number of people who are being held in prisons in this country. The United States is the world's lead incarcerator, and then you look at a country or a state, rather, like Louisiana, which has the highest rates of incarceration in the United States, and in many ways outstrips some of those classic human rights abusers that you think of, like China and Iran, in terms of the sheer number of people in prison related to the overall population. And so when we think about things like criminal justice and criminal justice reform in the United States, and you think about issues like the incarceration of poor people and the high rates of incarceration of people of color, it's clear that we're not just talking about criminal justice issues. We're also talking about economic and racial justice issues in this country.
There's no question. And your work and obviously the work of many people, and it's encouraging to see the Black Lives Matter movement starting to build. And so, yeah, even the president has done some of the right things here in terms of decriminalizing some offenses or moving in that direction and the federal system. There's starting to be a little bit of hope on the horizon. So we have to, you know, keep rooting, keep involved, and keep rooting for your work and many others to keep this issue in front of people until we get real change. Jasmine, we're coming to the end of this over the next minute or two, so I'm going to ask you for some final thoughts about what people listening to this show might be able to do and how they can send any kind of sign petition, send a couple of dollars your way, or whatever it is that makes helps make this thing go.
Absolutely. I would say, again, the first place that people should go to see all of Amnesty's work and to understand all of the ways in which they can become engaged is AmnestyUSA.org. To take action on Albert Woodfox's case, go to AmnestyUSA.org/Angola3. And to take action on behalf of imprisoned Saudi Arabian blogger Raif Badawi, AmnestyUSA.org/FreeRaif, FreeRaif. I would also encourage people to check out our annual Right for Rights campaign, which again, as I said, is a campaign that we have on behalf of prisoners of conscience, human rights defenders, and torture survivors all over the world. It happens around Human Rights Day on December 10th, and it's the world's largest grassroots human rights event. So if people want to learn more about that, they can go to right.amnestyusa.org and become involved in this year's campaign.
December 10th is Human Rights Day. Now, that's something a lot of us don't realize, but I'm going to write that down, put it on the calendar. We might have to track you down somewhere. Hopefully, I won't interrupt a holiday, and I'll catch you in your office. Maybe talk about that again in a couple of months. But we've been talking today on Wade's World to Jasmine Heiss, who is a senior campaigner for Amnesty International in the United States. She's told people how to get in touch. It's AmnestyUSA.org, and then there's a number of branches you can follow off of that tree to get involved, do what's right, send them some help, and in the meantime, keep this issue in front of you. Wage World, we're going to be talking to some other people next week. We've been on www.kbf.org, a podcast of this show. And I have to thank Jasmine. This is, I don't think we've ever had anybody as articulate for their issue ever on Wage World as Jasmine was. So she's been a heck of a representative for Amnesty International and this cause. So it's been a pleasure. We'll see you next Friday.
Oh,
well, our delight. This has been KABF 88.3, 100,000 watts of people power, the voice of the people, broadcast from Little Rock, Arkansas, heard around the world and rebroadcast in stations several places in the United States. We'll see you next Friday on Wage World. Thank you.